That's pretty good, actually.
Very loud.
Yeah, this one is called Crisp and Warm.
Oh. Yeah, that's nice.
Okay, I'll keep that. Do I need to adjust my levels?
Yeah, if you could be a bit quieter, that would be helpful. It's also really amplifying, like, your keyboard noise and general...
It sounds like someone's
very slowly and rhythmically jacking you off under the desk.
Well, it's because I'm pressing the button on the microphone, so that's going to come through quite loud.
Yeah.
Right, well, I think it's all sorted.
Yes.
It's nice to twiddle a knob.
Mm.
We want you to enjoy this, but you won't.
What a momentous occasion. It's the 250th episode.
And just for us, they've jailed R. Kelly.
Well, that's nice of them.
Have they?
So, he's gone to jail for 30 years for being a nonce. But being a nonce, setting up nonce schemes is the way I saw it phrased.
Yeah, like a sort of, a school. Possibly.
like a project.
Yeah, like adult education courses.
Yeah, I got to admit, I loosely thought that he'd been imprisoned some long time ago, so...
I think a lot of people did. They just assumed, like, it was a open and shut case, and it turned out it was. They just took really, really long time to do it.
You've suddenly gone really quiet again, Adam.
No, I haven't.
You did, but you...
No, I didn't. You were imagining things. But I'll tell you why. Because what I did was I turned my head like this to look at that monitor. The microphone is over here.
Ah, I see.
Is where my face needs to be. So I kind of need to do this in order to...
Why don't you hold it up like a lip mic, like you're commentating on the FA Cup final in the 1960s?
Mine's actually really suited to that. It looks faintly...
Oh, God, that's a bad idea. The cable's just dragged across my desk and knocked everything over.
Okay.
That didn't work.
So, episode 250, we thought about saving it up for when we were with people, but realistically, we'll not record a podcast that weekend because we'll be either hungover or drunk or both.
Both.
That's the plan. But it's lovely that two of our nice listeners are coming to join us. It's a shame that one of them just can't be asked to get off his fat Scottish arse and drive hundreds of miles.
Well, to be fair, there's a very real risk that if he does that, then by the time he tries to return, they'll have declared independence and he won't be allowed back in. So.
Yeah, I suppose. But, well, he's English anyway, so it saves him having to kick him out, doesn't it?
True. I don't know, is it like all the people did during Brexit? Like, if you can prove you've got, like, a Scottish great-uncle, you can claim Scottish citizenship and stay.
Like grandparent rights or what? Is it grandfather rights?
Yeah.
Or grandmother?
I think any grand.
Great-aunt?
I don't know how far removed from the family tree they have to be to qualify. Like, I imagine once you get more than, I don't know whether it has to be like immediate family, whether it can be like, you know, someone who's not actually your uncle, but you used to call them uncle.
What if you just really like Braveheart?
I don't know, because I mean, Mel Gibson famously not Scottish.
Okay, no, but the story is Scottish. I think they, while he...
The story of Mel Gibson.
Yeah. It's a cautionary tale if ever I heard one. Although it isn't, because, you know, everything's fine. He's directing films again and...
Yeah.
There's
basically turns out it's fine.
Consequences.
Yeah, it's fine to be anti-Semitic for a bit as long as you then stop.
Yeah. And he called a police officer Sugar Tits, which probably plays quite well to the alt-right brigade back in power now. I mean, the thing is, we don't know how sugary her tits were, so could have been a statement of fact.
Could have been.
But, you know, she was on duty, so you'd hope they weren't that sugary. But if she just stopped off for a donut, maybe he was just helpfully pointing out she had sugar on her tits.
It's possible, but I mean, the odds are he probably wasn't.
Yeah, fair enough. So I have two things to talk about. I know, given that it's the episode 250, I thought maybe some content wouldn't go amiss for a change.
No.
That seems reasonable.
I think we're within the last five episodes. I think, well, how many? I think there's still about six in the can, but because I skipped two because I wasn't on them and I had no desire to hear anything where I'm not speaking, I didn't edit those ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're almost within five episodes of having released what we're recording.
Yeah, I think that's probably...
The one I released the other day, I think, was recorded in March, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
So would you like item one or item two first?
Item two.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, I think Dan's vote for number two is...
So item two is that I am going on another stag do, again, as the designated bigger boy. So on Saturday, bigger boy.
Bigger than what?
Bigger than the other boys. Not really. In terms of size, in age.
Oh, I see. I thought this was a terrible penis joke for a second, but...
No, but okay. It's very, very small. So
you're the responsible adult?
Terrible. No, no, no. What about the last 30 years has led you to believe that I'm a responsible adult? I am the designated bigger boy.
You can be bigger than people while still being small, right? In the same way you can be the responsible adult while still not being responsible.
I mean, it's relative.
Well, I hope that I'm not the responsible adult because...
Yeah, I think everybody hopes that.
I'm going out Friday night as well, and I'm taking Dan with me Friday night, and I'm going to try and negotiate with him to come with me on the stag do on Saturday. He seems reluctant, but I have ways. I will.
We'll see how I feel.
So is this stag do taking place in London then?
Yeah. So I'm taking advantage of my free hospitality, which I haven't done enough yet. And so on Friday, I'm going to an awards luncheon with work where we've been nominated for an award.
Not you personally.
Work I have done. And so we're nominated for that. And then there's two possible outcomes. One is that we win the award and then we go out drinking to celebrate. Two is we win the award and go out drinking to commiserate.
Mm.
So there's two possible outcomes of that. Some of our sales guys will be there. They have a very... creative approach to the company expenses policy.
So
when Daniel finishes work and he comes down to Canary Wharf to meet us, we will be having a business meeting and we will be entertaining him, and that's how that can be signed off. So yes. Dan, you might have to be you might have some old bald men trying to sell you some screens for a bit and then they will leave you alone.
Yeah, you might have to sign some paperwork to the tune of several hundred thousand pounds.
And an NDA.
Okay, I'm sure I can manage that.
So, so some beers and then some dinner, and then, you know, I'll have been drinking since midday, so it seems stupid not to go out.
So I mean, what I'm looking forward to about this is the idea that you're going to have to go at it hard for 2 days in a row, and I think we all know how that ends.
Well, I was thinking about that, and recently I have been able to do that again, but I can't remember when. So now I'm wondering if I have actually imagined that. But I remember it was a thing for a long time that I could only do one night in a row, and Friday would write off Saturday.
Mm.
But then we've had occasions, we've had weekends where we've gone out, got drunk on Friday, and then done it again on Saturday, and it's been fine. I'm sure that's happened, but I can't remember when.
Have we, though? Or have we just, been sensible on the Friday nights?
Well, I don't think
we're capable of being sensible on a Friday night.
That's the thing, isn't it?
We did. I mean, when we went to see Chris...
Well,
I wasn't sensible because I ate too much cheese and gave myself a hangover.
Yes. that's true.
Yeah.
But the rest of us were fairly sensible.
Cheese restaurant.
Yeah, I could do that. But... I don't think it's fair to inflict the little boys on the stag do to my horrible guts if I go hard on the cheese on Friday night. I mean, that's not to say I won't, but I shouldn't. Yeah. But I'm sure recently we've been able, but then I thought, do we do that in Lisbon? We didn't really get that drunk in Lisbon, so I don't think I did it then. When we went to Hull, we definitely had beers on the Friday and then on the Saturday again, and we did it all right both nights then.
Yeah,
but Friday wasn't that heavy.
Yeah. But I have done and have been able to do two big nights in a row and just powered through and been able to get away with it recently. So that's what I'm planning on doing at the weekend anyway.
Yeah. Do you know the fun thing is?
Mm-hmm.
On Sunday, I have to get up early and go and referee a bunch of small children doing sports.
Oh, brilliant. What time is early?
I need to be there for 9:30 and it's like barely in London.
Where is it?
Where is it? National Youth Day is West Wickham.
Oh, fuck that. That's not conducive to me getting a train from King's Cross at 10:30.
Well, I mean, have you booked your specific ticket?
Yes, because I thought if I don't, and if I just let myself wake up and get back to home sort of as my condition allows, I won't get home until probably 7 or 8 in the evening.
I was going to say Tuesday, but yeah.
Yeah, so my plan was to book a specific train back, and then I have to get up and sort of function.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm stuck in London.
Yeah, you'll be pleased to know that my house is very easy to get to King's Cross. So
yeah. But 10:30 seems achievable.
Yeah, assuming there's no rail strike.
Well, I think that's just a general caveat for anything you want to do these days.
That's true.
So, I'm the designated bigger boy. And as the groom's older brother, I guess I'm sort of de facto best man. That's certainly how I'll be behaving.
Yeah.
So I will be throwing him in a canal, shouting at women.
Plenty of them around.
Don't see many women around.
No, there'll be plenty.
Oh, there'll be plenty. Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's fair. It's Pride on Saturday as well, so I'm going to get him a pup mask. Mm-hmm. They'll be readily available. Just go and join in and have a lovely time.
Excellent.
So last time I was a bigger boy on the stag, it was fine. And the younger, cooler boys talked to me a bit, and then I got drunk and everything. That's fine anyway, isn't it? So
yeah.
So yeah, that's Saturday. So AMA.
You actually have, like, do you have any duties as part of this?
Nobody has told me I have, so I'm going to assign myself duties.
Nice.
So I went on Reginald, how do you say Richard Hughes in our algorithm? What was Hughes? Hughes doesn't mean anything, does it?
No.
Reginald Humphreys, stag do. He was with a lot of bigger boys, rather than his friends. He went with, because the Welshman, Raoul Dafydd, booked it, so and invited all of his friends instead of Richard's, which I think is a good idea if you're somebody's best man and you're having to do the stag do, just do the weekend you want to do. And he very much adopted that approach. It was commendable. But they made lots of drinking rules, which at the time I remember thinking, this is really stupid. This is going to be shit. And then being proved right. But some of them, so you weren't allowed to say the word drink. So people kept having to say imbibe, and it was stupid. And if somebody said, "Oh, drink that," or "Yeah, have your beverage," it would be, "Can you imbibe that, please? We need to go to another pub." And it was just stupid. And if you did say drink, everyone went, "Whoa!" I don't know why. The other one, which was quite a good idea, but none of them were good ideas, but it was more creative, was if the minute hand was in the right-hand side of the clock face, you had to drink with your right hand. And if it was in, so then if it was after past the hour and before the hour, you have to drink with your left hand. So if you saw somebody drinking with the wrong hand, again, you would shout at them and call them a homosexual. What were the other ones? I think...
Something about numbers, presumably.
What's the numbers?
Well, you're not allowed to say certain numbers. You've got to replace, like, five becomes fuzzy and...
Do you mean the game where you
play you're thinking of, like, Fizzbuzz.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, but sometimes people just do that as a drinking game.
What is wrong with people?
Idiots, that's what's wrong with them.
Yeah. The best thing to do is just to shout that people aren't proper men until they drink lots more, and then you don't have to make up games for that. You can just bully them into it. And that's traditionally what stag and stag party would be like. But then it gets spoiled with games. I can't remember what any of the other ones were now. But I think there was another one, but it might just be a game that we played once where the stag had to be drinking whenever anybody else was drinking. I think we did that on Julian. How do you say Jarrett? Okay. Why do we have friends with names that don't mean anything?
Oh, it's difficult, isn't it?
I don't know what you would. Well, anyway, James Jarrett. On his stag do, we took that to quite an extreme where I think he went through four pints, not downing them, but certainly without being allowed to put his drink down or breathe in between, and he looked quite poorly. So that was quite good fun, that one.
Good.
I was thinking maybe I'll just introduce some drinking rules, but I thought maybe I could just make up new ones and they'll be like, oh, well, the bigger boy said that at quarter past the hour you have to stand on one leg if you're drinking and stuff like that. And I'll just say, you know, this is what all of us bigger boys know, and they'll all be intimidated maybe because of my age. So they'll be saying he's in his 30s, so he knows what he's talking about. We need to be just like him and impress him.
Oh dear, you're going to get so disappointed, I can tell. Have any activities been organised?
Yes, but ooh. I don't know what they are.
Right.
So yeah, I haven't been given any information. So the exact brief that I've been given is Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens, then one tube ride to a place to eat, and
that's continue. A strip club.
I hope so.
Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens.
Axe if throwing. Dan knows about it, then yes, it must be.
No, axe throwing.
Axe throwing. Oh wow.
Yeah.
whether they want me to or not, I'm just going to go into a park in Vauxhall and start chucking axes. Okay, so it's Vauxhall Pleasure Gardens, and then one tube ride to a place to eat and continue some drinks. And then I think we're ending up on the Beer Mile, which is, that's the one in Bermondsey, presumably.
Yes.
There's not two Beer Miles, is there? Okay. So I think that's what we're doing, but I have nothing more concrete than that.
Cool.
My brother knows about the stag do because I said to the best man, before I invited Dan, I thought I'd just check that that's not going to put anyone's plans out or anything. Before I just start turning up with a plus one, which is quite a bold move.
Yeah.
But he knows, so the best man said he might go to his house, tase him, drag him into a cab and ship him to Sweden, but not on that day. And I pointed out that the day before his wedding would be the funniest day to do that. and then I informed him about the Bantz loophole, which means you don't have to consider other people's feelings. And he said, that's true, it would be good Bantz. Like, there you go. So,
I think that is like it's the plot of numerous like films and episodes of TV shows. Man wakes up on wedding day morning in another country in his pants.
And as the de facto best man, I think it's essential that I contribute to this. Now, the stag do is the best time to sort of do that. The biggest issue is that the wedding is, I think, 7 weeks after. So
that's a very early stag do.
I think that's probably the reason. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks before. So
is that that's early at stag do? I feel like the new tradition with stag do's is you kind of just do them when you can actually get people together, and if that's early, that's early.
Yeah, I think it's
But still, eight weeks is very early.
I mean, the costs on the shipping container for 8 weeks, and then somebody's going to have to go and feed him and stuff. It's just awkward, isn't it? Eyebrows grow quite a long way in 8 weeks. Limbs can regrow in 8 weeks. There's just so much that's counter to any fun I might be planning.
Yeah, but tattoos don't fade in 8 weeks.
No, that's true. Especially on the face.
Yeah.
Probably.
In fact, that might be a benefit because the tattoo will have had the swelling will have had a chance to subside, so you'll get the full crisp image.
That's true. Nice spider web.
Yeah.
How long do henna tattoos take to fade?
I have no idea, but they're for cowards, surely, in these circumstances.
Well, I'm thinking that if it was a more traditional stag do that was sort of closer to the wedding, then a henna tattoo would be equally as funny as a permanent tattoo, but also maybe wouldn't ruin the rest of their life, just the most important day of it. So I think if you could get a henna tattoo on the face, and technically you haven't done anything wrong because it's not a permanent tattoo and it's not your fault they planned the wedding so close to the stag do that the henna wouldn't have faded.
Yeah. Well, I think that would be safe, but maybe that's why it's so far out, so that any potential hennering. So
know
fade.
That I can't henna his face, maybe. Yeah.
But then there's almost no reason not to shave his eyebrows.
Yeah.
That'll have grown back, won't they?
Yeah, but then that in itself is a reason not to shave his eyebrows, because what's the point if it's not going to spoil his wedding? It's just going to spoil 8 weeks before it. I just want to spoil that one very important day for him. So, Dan, you work in a hospital. Can you get me an IV line and bag and one of the things that I can wheel around central London and just pour beer into the top of it?
No.
Okay. Can you steal me a cannula?
Again, no.
What's a cannula? That's the one that goes in the arm, isn't it, for the IV? I mean a catheter.
Again, no, but there's a lot of specialty sex shops in Soho, so you'll be able to buy one there.
Catheters are really something that haven't cornered the market of stag do's.
Where are you going with this?
The stag industry is a multi-million pound industry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I won't argue with that.
So you get companies that are dedicated just to hiring out dwarves and women who are to be subjected. That's all they do. They just plan this. Now, for an added extra per person, they could catheterize you and you don't have to waste valuable drinking time going to the toilet.
Right. Well, I have two issues with that, right?
Yeah.
The first one is, it's not magic if we're just carrying around a bag of piss with you the whole evening.
No, it goes into a big bucket, which you just pour out into the canal on your way out of the pub.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do that, you might as well just run a hose down your trouser leg.
Yeah, but then there's room for it to leak out, isn't there? With the catheter, it's secure, it's up there. You know it's not going to wiggle itself
free.
That's
the other problem.
Yeah.
Is the beginning the night... with a series of people who are not yet drunk.
No, but they could apply a local anaesthetic.
Well, you'd have to.
Which is probably a good idea for stag do's anyway.
Well, yes. But you certainly limits the risk.
And you can then just, condom catheters.
It's like okay.
It sounds. It's a condom with a tube coming out the end. And then if you shave your balls or nail your balls or what have you, you can then surgical take that in place. No risk of leakage.
Mm-hmm.
And much less chance of infection or traumatic uninsertion.
And if you get lucky with a lady, you've already got a condom on.
Well,
albeit one full of piss.
You have a hole in it for the tube. But
yeah, it wouldn't be ideal, would it?
No.
No, but then you just sort of fold that back on itself and you jizz out the window. So it's actually more sanitary. But a condom cutter is somewhat less invasive than having to have something put up the urethra. I won't use the problematic phrase, which we all know what it is. Nobody's ever really addressed it. We just all collectively stopped using it one day, which I think is to be commended.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had this discussion.
But just think how, like for our pub crawls, just think how much better it would be if we didn't have to go to the toilet so much. Like, sometimes you get to the point where you're going for a wee every 20 minutes, don't you? Just gets unsustainable.
I mean, just I get
pop
that.
Pop the end of the hose out the window and just let nature take its course. I think it's a good idea.
I mean, you're welcome to trial it.
The obvious solution here is take it on Dragon's Den.
Well, that's kind of why I started my pitch with the facts and figures about the stag industry being a billion-pound industry,
I assume it is.
I don't know. Yeah,
yeah, it probably is. You're right.
Say, look, dragons, you want a piece of that action, don't you? What's the worst thing about going to the pub? They will say, as one, going for a piss.
Yeah,
that's just what would happen. Even Meaden would say, oh, yeah, going for a piss. It's like, right, it's slightly different for you. We'll get into the details of that shortly. I'm not entirely sure how it all works down there. I might need to bring in a consultant. But I can certainly, you know, get Peter Jones to pop it on.
But the problem is you trade the worst part of a night out being going to the toilet for, the worst part of a night out being...
being castorized before you go out,
yes. Wearing your balls and junk before going out, because apparently that stuff's quite painful.
Not if you actually use catheter, and you don't need to...
So in that case, it's accidentally treading on your catheter tube and... dragging an inflated balloon through your penis the wrong way.
Is there a risk it could back up?
Well, so basically what happens is to hold it up there, so it's a thin tube, but there's a little bubble at the end. So you put the thing in, and once it's in place, you inflate the little bubble so that there's like a small marble-sized knot in there so that it doesn't come out.
Yeah, it's like tying a bit of string to stop it going back through a bathroom light cord.
Yeah, yeah, yes, exactly. But obviously, if you yank it, it's like dragging a bathroom light cord with the knob on the end through your penis backwards.
We've all done that. We've all been there. Come on, we've all experimented.
I'm going to say I haven't.
Okay. So I think catheterization, that takes care of one end.
I'm looking forward to having to put catheterization as one of the main topics in this episode when someone comes to edit it.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, like, on a police statement or something.
That too. But...
it's the entire chapter in your memoirs.
Yeah.
Which will mostly be, oh, God, oh, God.
Here are all the times that Graham catheterised me. So that takes care of one side. Now, you're going to need some kind of colostomy bag, but I think that's less of a thing. That's more for sort of the morning after.
I was going to say, that's not a common problem.
You don't really do that. And actually, the one time that we all went and did a poo on a night out, we all came back and our spirits were lifted and we lost a pound of unnecessary weight and we all got our second wind, if you don't think about that expression too much. So, so the catheterization, obviously, that takes care of the output. I think the IV drip is, again, something that, you know, what's the worst part of drinking? Feeling a bit sick. So this is why people do like vodka enemas, isn't it? Because you get more booze into your system without your brain realizing what you're doing and trying to chunder it up. So I'm assuming it would be a similar approach with an IV.
There is a slight problem there, which is that, and I'm not a doctor, so obviously take this with a grain of salt, but I believe that introducing lager into your blood flow would be bad for you.
In the long term. Short term, you could get away with it, I would think.
I think even short term, it would be pretty bad for you, especially
if every day for a month, it wouldn't be
good. Like, how much blood is there in a human body? Is it 8 pints?
8 pints, something like that, yeah.
Could quite easily, on a heavy night, replace all of the blood in your system with lager.
Because the blood would still be in there as well. You would just really up the pressure. And the kidneys...
You would definitely die.
the kidneys exist for this exact reason. They filter the lager out of the blood. And, well, I think the other thing to remember is that you wouldn't have to drink that many pints because it would go straight into your blood, bypassing...
That is true, you get wankered very quickly.
Exactly. So what you would have is sort of the ideal flow rate to keep you at peak drunkenness.
I guess that is the advantage, right, is that you can manage that flow rate, whereas that's difficult to do when you're having to...
Pissed.
Well, yes, but also when you're having to take alcohol orally...
Yes.
In a really inefficient way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we need to make it more efficient. And I think a lager IV is the logical, and it doesn't have to be lager. I mean, it could be ale. If you want to, you could put in wine if you were feeling fancy. No reason you couldn't put gin and tonic in there. The slice of lemon would be difficult to, I guess it might sort of clog the bottom of the bag up.
Well, no, you do like Corona. You just kind of stick it in the top of the tube.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah.
They have little bubble filters. You just shove it in there.
Okay, there you go. Yeah,
it's like shoving it in the top of the bottle.
Right, perfect. So yeah, easier to refresh the lemon halfway through a drink. You don't have to fish around to get it out. If you need
the
a bit of a
boost,
the problem
is you do have the serious risk of tangling.
Yes.
And you've got like dozens of people in the pub all with their little trolley.
Yeah, that's not good, is it? So I think pubs it's manageable because you'd sort of be you're sat for a lot of time.
Yeah, you're mostly stationary. You definitely shouldn't do it in a club.
When you won't need to go to the toilet because we've taken care of that. So there's no reason for you to leave your table. In a club, all bets are off. I think people would be like swinging them around their heads and stuff. I think it would be carnage. So
just people choking to death.
Yeah. Yeah. People saying
mistaking the IV bag for the catheter bag, that kind of thing.
Oh, that would be a brilliant stag prank, wouldn't it? Just swap the swap your catheter bag out for the groom's IV bag, and before he knows it, he's got your.
I think it would probably lead to more table service in pubs.
Yes, I guess so. Yeah,
they could do like, you know how you go into pubs and a lot of them now have got like the hooks under the tables for your bags.
Mm.
Like, mm-hmm. So, it'd be something like that. You just have the thing, you come in, you just put your hook on.
Good for the hat stand industry. Yeah.
I have been struggling in recent years.
Yeah. I think that it could be fun just sort of hook somebody else's IV up to your cannula to see what they're on and that sort of stuff. I think that it could be interesting because you wouldn't like share drinks because people would have their mouth on it. That's a bit disgusting, isn't it? So, but when it's intravenous, you don't need to worry about that. As long as there's not too much backflow, because obviously then you run into problems, but we'll let the boffins figure that out.
I assume that's probably a solved problem by now.
I'd hope so, yeah. But I don't think there's any downsides to this plan, really. And the other good thing is that if you're walking around with a IV on one of those big things on wheels, you could have a backless gown and just be shuffling around in your socks as well. Just complete the look.
True. And... Ooh. It's way less likely that you're going to get into a fight with someone because they're going to look at you and they're going to assume that you're, you know,
dying,
terminally ill. Yeah.
Which probably, to be fair, you are.
You've just put 8 pints of lager into your bloodstream.
Yeah. But then if that happens, if somebody did start a fight with you, you just pour a dragon soup in and then...
I was going to say, you just beat them to death with the...
Well, yeah, you can while waiting for the dragon soup to sort of work its way into your system and give you superpowers... you can beat them to death with the stand. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that an IV dragon soup would kill you instantly.
Yes, but also anyone in your vicinity, so you'd achieve what you were going for.
It would definitely be fatal. There's no question.
Well, in what quantity?
In any quantity. Dragon soup in the bloodstream is fatal at any concentration.
I think there's a toxic dose. I'll grant you that. I think it's more than... I think half a can, you'd be fine.
You would definitely be dead. Anything more than trace amounts, you've had it.
Mm, yeah.
They could give it to soldiers like before they go into combat. It would result in probably quite a lot of friendly fire, but the enemy would be decimated.
I mean, you could give it to the enemy before they go into combat, and then they
that's true.
Sort of solve the problem for you.
You'd get, you know, those t-shirt cannons they have at American sports things. Mm. I think they can configure those to put like cans of beer in. They could just fire tins of dragon soup into the enemy camps.
The ones that aren't killed by the impact would be killed by the contents.
Yeah, and then the enemies would drink it, and then they'd all just start fighting among themselves, and then next day you stroll over No Man's Land, just pick, you know, take out the losers who haven't died of heart failure yet.
Who just passed out with a terrible hangover.
Hmm. I saw a man on TikTok reviewing a can of dragon soup venom as if it was a fine wine. It was,
I like that like, guy.
Quite funny, but the venom is, I'm glad we haven't had it because it looks just, I think looking at it makes you feel like you're quite drunk. It's like fluorescent yellow.
To be fair, though, all of the ones that we had when we were at Will's and we decanted them.
Yeah, none of them were good.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe maybe this weekend is the perfect time for me to get back on the dragon soup horse that I fell off.
Is that like the soup dragon?
Yeah, yeah. I fell off the dragon, so it's time to dust myself off and get back on again. Because I haven't had any heart palpitations for ages.
Are you missing them?
Not necessarily missing them, but I'm just wondering if maybe whatever heart condition I had that contributed to my near-death experience has just cleared up now.
Probably. There's only one way to find out, isn't there?
Exactly. I think the issue there was that I had two cans, and that's not the right amount.
And that is medically inadvisable.
To be fair, I think one can is.
It's kind of incredible that it's still for sale.
Well, it's actually illegal in America, which, considering the sort of shit they sell, that is worrying, isn't it? The kind of stuff they haven't banned, and yet dragon soup is too dangerous for the Americans.
Yeah, you can buy an assault rifle, you know, at age 12, but
yeah.
Dragon soup, I mean, it's just too much risk to life and limb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could start bootlegging it. Let's just start smuggling it into America. Sell it to teens. It's probably not the best thing I could do with my life, but I could. We could sort of live out.
So it might be quite a good thing to do.
It's what? Sorry.
An abortifacient.
What's that mean?
It induces abortions.
Oh, is that a thing? It is, or you think it probably is?
Probably. I mean, it's got to.
Yeah, it's not going to do the baby any good, is it?
Look at it, for crying out loud.
I think there's some kind of statistic, something like 25% of babies born in Scotland have got fetal dragon soup syndrome. Something like that.
I can believe it.
It's quite a social...
If any of them survived.
Yeah, but they're all absolute fucking legends.
It's very dark.
Yeah. I could live out my days as I can't remember the fella's name. Who was the drugs fella from South America?
Pablo Escobar.
Yes, Pablo Escobar. I can be the Pablo Escobar of dragon soup.
Yes, because that way you can get a dragon soup addicted hippo.
Did he have a drug addicted hippo?
Yes.
Yeah, you know,
wow, I never got to that episode of Narcos because I just got bored of it and turned it off.
No, when Escobar abandoned his compound, like there were a bunch of hippos with crack addictions because like all of the wastage from like the refining and bagging and all that shit just got dumped into the waterway in the compound. Obviously, the hippos, they're mostly aquatic, so they were just spending their entire life swimming in coke-laden water, and thus they were massive cokeheads.
They're probably the happiest hippos in the world.
Well, hippos are bastards anyway.
Yeah.
And like coked up hippos are no one's friend.
Yeah.
Was that the inspiration for the game Hungry Hungry Hippos, do you think?
Probably. Coke makes you angry more than hungry, as I understand it.
Yeah, that's true. If it had been weed, then
it's quite moorish, though, I understand.
Oh, so maybe the balls represented like little bags of crack. Or crack rocks, maybe. Maybe that's how they played it originally. It was just like little crack is a rock, isn't it? I don't really know what crack is.
It can be. I've never quite understood it, but one of them's a powder and one of them's like, you melt it maybe, or is that heroin? I don't know.
No, heroin you melt. I think you smoke crack.
All right.
I think it comes in rock form, like rock salt, I suppose. It's like the difference between rock salt and table salt.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So I guess you're at a party and you're a middle-class party because they have a crack grinder, an electric one. And then...
Fuck
off, cat.
Sorry, my cat is screaming at me.
No, just wanted to scratch the door for no reason. Good. So anyway, that was my first thing. What was my second thing? I posted about it in the staff room. Let me find it.
Oh, yeah, you said something about a thing that you were going
to... What did I say? Oh, yes. So I've got an exciting update about being the youngest Graham in Europe.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yes. So I learnt via the side of his van that the father of a girl in Izzy's class is also called Graham.
Yeah.
So I looked him up on Facebook. No information about his age there. Went on to everybody's favourite, the electoral roll. Couldn't make out any more really than he was in the ballpark of my age.
Mm-hmm.
Now he looked around about my age, I would have said. So he could have been a little bit younger, could have been a little bit older. Quite a nice bloke, so it would have been a shame to have had to kill him. He beat me in the dad's race at Sports Day last week because he is a proper person and he can run while holding a tennis ball on a tennis racket. So that suggests to me that...
I thought you were going to say a beer and then I remembered school sports day.
Oh, I'd love to have taken a beer to school sports day. That would have been great. What a fucking legend I'd have been. I'd have won the dad's race, not in any kind of physical sense, but in the sense that, yeah, certainly I'd be the people's champion.
Yes.
Because I would have just walked with a beer. Anyway, he beat me. Anyway, so I was running out of avenues to discover his age, so I had to deploy Izzy, and I got her to ask Emily how old her dad was. She said, why do you want to know? And I said, because I'm worried he might be the youngest Graham in Europe. And I left it at that. She didn't ask any questions, which is good because that's a weird thought process to have to explain to a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
But so she asked, and Emily told her that her dad is older than me. So I remain the youngest Graham in Europe. But brilliantly, he's not even just a little bit older than me. He's 42. He's well into his 40s.
I would have thought that your ideal opportunity to establish his age would have been after he beat you at the school, at the parents' race.
Oh, I like
that. And then to like go and congratulate him and go like,
I'm 39, so that's probably why you won.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you've gone, well, I'm 42, mate. I'd have gone, yes! That would have been harder to explain than to a 10-year-old, because to a 10-year-old, the logic is there.
Yeah, but that's true, actually. To a 10-year-old, it makes perfect sense that you'd be concerned about being the youngest Graham in Europe.
But no, she found out that he's 42, so it's not even like he's... Because I was worried he would also be 39, then we'd have to get into what month was he born, and that's hassle, but no, is
it? I mean, let's be honest, if it was both 39... Well, actually, no, because we're in the middle of the year, so it makes it difficult, because it could
doesn't
be...
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
But no, he's... in tennis, this will be a victory. He's clear 2 points ahead of me, and a bit. So...
Yeah. I mean, the downside is that he beat you at an athletic event despite being basically geriatric.
Ah, so the good thing about that is I don't give a shit.
Oh, okay, no, that is the right
thing. And I find that's quite a good approach to life, really.
But also, I feel like pretty much anybody would have beaten Graham in that race.
I was third.
Nice.
I mean, there were only two of you competing, but...
Yes. one of them was, he looked quite frail, so I don't really count that as a victory. Two of them were women. But there was two other men that were slower than me.
Women in the dad's race.
Sorry? Well, yes, it was quite sexist for me to call it a dad's race. It was just a parents' race.
Oh, right, fine. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I'd like to issue a formal apology about that.
Okay.
But,
I know it's you that's a... Fuck, I've forgotten the phrase. But the school is reasonably progressive.
Yeah, no, it was a parents' race. And there were so many parents volunteered that they had to do, I think, 4 races. And if I'd known that, I wouldn't have bothered. Because I only went because it's just not worth the hassle of not doing it.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
I was wearing shorts.
Run away anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Might as well run in the preferred direction.
Well, it was actually in the opposite direction to my house, which is not ideal. But I'll have a word with the headmaster about that next year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, I remain the youngest Graham in Europe. And I haven't even had to kill anyone.
Good.
And what I don't have, like this other Graham, though, is a van with my name on it, which I think is something that I should rectify.
You considered stealing his van?
It does have half my name on it already, yeah. Do you want to know something that's even worse? Not only is he cooler and faster and older than me, you already know his surname. You've seen it because I shared the Facebook page. So his name is Graham Bond, which is, I think, about 400 times better than my surname. I mean, Bond is just one of the best surnames. That's established fact. But it's sort of the Bond really counterbalances the shitness of the name Graham. The only way his name could be better was, well, if it wasn't Graham for a start, but if it had to be Graham, if it was the Scottish spelling. Graham with an E-M-E, Bond would be, that's like peak Graham. I don't think you could get better than that. So I might just have to kill him anyway, even though he is older than me, just for making me feel like I'm the one letting the Grahams
down. Out of spite.
Yeah, more or less, yeah. Because if the name Graham doesn't suit me, it absolutely doesn't suit him. I think, I am closer in spirits to a 55-year-old actuary than he is by quite some distance.
So. Well, I'm continuing to, like, I'm not quite the youngest Adam in Europe, obviously. That would be
an insane thing to say.
However, I do seemingly somehow manage to continue to be the youngest person in any job that I work in terms of my department.
Really?
And it's starting to get disconcerting.
That is
like
weird.
It was one thing when I was like in my 20s, it's like, okay, that makes sense, I'm the youngest person in the department. And then like in my 30s, like, this is starting to get a bit weird that there's like nobody younger than me in any of these teams I'm part of. Now that I'm approaching 40, it's just like, this is just weird now. Like,
that doesn't make a lot of
sense.
It's
some kind of statistical outlier. There's just no, I mean, I know everyone's going into like, you know, everyone's going into cyber.
Yeah.
Like that ballerina.
Yeah.
But still, it's kind of mad that there just doesn't seem to be anybody.
Well, you would think with that many people going into cyber that some of them would come in and be younger than you.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's...
Are you suggesting that it's all old people cyber who have retrained?
Well, no. Well, I mean, part of it, and obviously ballerinas, but like it tends to be a different segment. Unless you're in a, like, if you're in a, it's one of those things where if you're in a company that's small enough where like everyone's in one big team, they don't tend to have the budget to actually have people that are dedicated to this stuff. So you tend to find that you just kind of get generalists and there aren't any of them. Whereas if you work somewhere larger, like the place I'm working at the moment, you know, they've absolutely got people that are younger than me working in other teams.
Yeah.
In IT. Just not in the team that I'm working in.
Do you ever think maybe you're an unwitting subject in some kind of social experiment?
I mean, it seems quite likely.
It would explain a lot, wouldn't it? Mm. I mean, specifically with regard to work, not just your life in general.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about retraining just so that I can not be the youngest person in a job.
As a ballerina.
Well, I mean, there's obviously a lot of vacancies now that they've all retrained in cyber.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, the Russian Ballet lost half its members to cyber.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Russian Ballet, not a particularly popular destination right now.
The other half to doping.
So I'm thinking possibly like the Royal Ballet.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
They can't have anyone left now.
No.
All gone for cyber.
No, and I guess it's hard for them to recruit and sort of from the youth squad as well, because of the whole connection with Prince Andrew being royal, they've had to shut that down.
Yeah, well,
it's not worth the risk, is it? So, I think I could see you as a lovely ballerina, a nice prima donna. That'd be
nice. I'm not sure I've got the toe strength.
No, but that comes with practice, doesn't it?
No.
You haven't got it at the moment, but, you know, in 4 to 6 weeks, who knows how strong your toes could be.
True. Yeah. I don't know how good the pay is as a ballerina.
Well, I mean, it's a buyer's market, surely. Terrible.
It's got to be at least minimum wage, obviously.
I mean, not in Brexit Britain.
Or you think you have to make it up in tips?
Yeah.
They do come around with a bucket at the end of the show, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, a ballet dancer, according to Google, makes anything between $14,500 to $256,500 in a year. That's quite a range, really.
Well, I mean, $14,500 is fucking terrible.
Well, that's about £28,000 now, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, pounds like fucked.
It's minimum wage, basically.
It's not even minimum wage.
No, quite considerably lower. Most ballet dancers' salaries. Ballet dancers' salary is a phrase that doesn't make any kind of logic.
No, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, fall between $14,500 and $36,500. I think
that's quite.
Rule of thumb for US salaries is generally you halve it because of the other stuff that's involved. So you're looking at $7,000 to $18,000 a year, which is not great, is it?
No.
Probably not something I could live on.
Okay, here's an article on The Guardian, so this will be more useful to us. And Glassdoor has got a salary for ballet dancer.
Oh, there we go.
So Glassdoor, this will be a useful one. Okay, right. Well, average base pay for a salary for a ballet dancer, and this is rated with very high confidence, average is $31,595 a year. And that's not bad, but really,
basically,
is it?
Basically, UK median wage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty good for an entry level role in a ballet.
I mean, I feel like you'd have to obviously aim higher than that. You don't want to just be one of the kind of, you know, session dancers.
Like, it's not an entry level role. Fuck me. I think, like,
this is an insane statistic. Salary estimates are based on 33,910 salaries submitted anonymously to Glassdoor by ballet dancer employees.
Wow.
That's a lot of ballet dancers.
That is definitely not true.
40,000 ballet dancers who have been on Glassdoor and submitted their salaries.
Okay, well, I've now got some of the companies that some of these ballet dancers work for. So,
like Capgemini, Interserve.
So you could earn, on average, GCS. 28. You could, as a ballet dancer, you could earn 28 to 30K for Royal Mail.
Okay.
If you are a freelance ballet dancer, you're looking at £20 to £22 an hour. £20 to £22 an hour if you go freelance.
Yeah, okay, that's so.
I mean, I guess most ballet dancers would be freelance when they're sort of a contract role.
Yeah, I mean, so I think probably like if you're like a sort of agency worker kind of thing.
Yeah, so £160 a day rate. That's quite a low day rate. I think you could probably.
Yeah, I guess it's not amazing.
If you did some courses, got your certificates, you could probably up that.
Yeah.
Rico Logistics paid 19 to 21K. So if you're going to go salary and PAYE, you definitely want to be a Royal Mail ballet dancer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Rico.
Yeah.
Printers are shit.
Right. Well, this one's good because it's convenient. It's local for you. The Birmingham Royal Ballet. You're looking at 52 to 57K.
That's, yeah, I could certainly do that, and it would be actually working for a ballet company and not the Royal Mail.
But if you went to Bad Boy Entertainment, it would be 15 to 16, so I'd probably steer clear of the Bad Boy Ballet. The Birmingham Royal Ballet is probably...
It does also sound reputable. Like it's a front for a strip club.
Yeah. Well, even a front for a strip club, it just sounds like it's a strip club.
Yeah. Bad Boy Ballet. No, it doesn't. If the strip club was called Bad Boy Ballet, nobody would ever go in.
No.
It's making me
Nobody would understand what market they were pitching to.
Are they pitching it to the bad boys or is it for the bad boys? Because doing the ballet or...
Is it like Chippendales? Is it a classic strip club?
Yeah.
Is it targeting like a gay market? Like,
it's really both ends of the spectrum and absolutely nothing in between, isn't it?
Yeah, it's entirely too ambiguous.
Yeah. I would, and I'm not a professional careers advisor, but so obviously all the caveats apply to my professional advice, but I would recommend you don't go and work for Bad Boy Ballet.
Okay, well, I'll take that under advice.
But, you know, it's, I mean, it sounds it's your like the decision.
Birmingham Ballet definitely Ballet, seems yeah. like the way to go.
So let's see if they've got any vacancies.
I could do with like 50k a year.
Car allowance, I suppose, would be useful as well.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to use public transport.
Right. Birmingham Royal Ballet, UK's premier ballet company. Let's click the Get Involved link. Looks like Birmingham Hippodrome has come up on here as well, so I guess they get some hippos doing ballet. Very crackhead hippos. It's like a program to get them off drugs. So they do ballet training. They don't seem to have a vacancies page, which is odd. But community groups, freefall dance company. Yeah, it's mostly. Well, there's a lot of training schemes. So I think you can probably, I think you could retrain in ballet. That's a thing you could do. You can donate. Well,
I want to donate. I want them to pay me.
Well, yeah, exactly. That doesn't make any sense, does it?
The whole point of this.
There's a shop. Presumably if you just turned up in a leotard and ballet shoes, they'd be like, this guy knows what he's doing. It's a dress for the job you want. Next time you go into the office, go in full ballet gear and just say you're dressing for the job you want.
Yeah.
So the a group of 10 highly gifted dancers with severe learning disabilities, mentored and supported by Birmingham Royal Ballet staff. Do you want to know what they call that group? That group is called the Freefall Dance Company, which I think seems quite unkind.
Yeah.
Not really probably what they're going for. Yeah, I can't. So maybe if I just search, if I go on read.co.uk, it's not Read now, is it? What's the one that I haven't applied for a job for 14 Indeed. Years? So Indeed, yeah, that's the one that everyone bangs on about. I'll look on LinkedIn as well.
On LinkedIn is the place to go as a
dancer. Birmingham. I'll search ballerina on Indeed. So you've got to hit all the keywords, haven't you?
Yeah, it's about SEO optimization these days.
Mm. Yeah. Have you updated your CV for ballerina? Guess what?
Not yet. We only started talking about it in the last 15 minutes.
So what you're saying? I assumed you were doing that while we were.
Yeah.
Right, well, no, I wanted to find out if it was worth it first. That was the whole point. Like, I'm not going to rewrite my CV if it turns out that it's not financially viable.
Well, we already established it is. You're going to go in 52k base.
Yeah.
No jobs for ballet dance from Birmingham on Reed. Nothing on Indeed either. So that's a bit weird. Maybe they sort of have specialist press that they advertise in rather than online.
Yeah, they'll have like their own recruitment.
LinkedIn is probably a risky place to be doing things like this because I'm logged in. Ballerina in Birmingham. Remote. You could be a remote. Let's say you want to be a remote ballerina. No, there aren't any remote ballerinas. I guess so. Maybe it's like, you know, the ABBA thing. Now, I don't know what the holograms. That is, but I assume they are doing the performance, but then like Tron characters are appearing on stage instead of these horrible, wrinkled old people.
I assume it'd be like, I guess it's basically just performance capture, right? They stick him in a table tennis ball yes. suit and...
Yep.
Do the performance capture and then, yeah, replay it.
Yeah, that would make most sense.
I could definitely do that. And then you can fix me being shit at ballet in post.
Well, that's true. You could deep fake yourself onto an actual ballet dancer.
Yeah. Use that as my portfolio video.
Yeah. No, LinkedIn isn't finding any ballerina jobs either. So,
and this implies it's quite difficult.
I guess you probably need to go in as an apprentice or something, which is not going to be ideal.
Yeah. Well, you've got it's a classic intern. Classic nepotism. You've got to know people already in the industry to...
Not who you know, it's who you blow. Actually, that's probably is quite a big part of it. It's probably quite horrible. And I guess there is always the upside that you might be secretly being trained and programmed as an assassin. You can't rule that out, but I think that's probably more,
to be honest,
more Russian ballet than Birmingham. Just be programming you as a yardie.
I quite like to be an assassin. Like not actually to have to do any of it, but the training would be good.
Well, why don't we let's look on Glassdoor for assassin.
I imagine it's very well paid.
I think the problem is it's contract work, isn't it? Almost exclusively. So.
Oh yeah, I've done that anyway. That's not a problem. I'm used to contract work.
But it's probably not like 6 month contracts.
You'd imagine it would mostly be shorter gigs, but that's not a problem.
Okay,
get in there, you get your work done, you get out again. Make sure you document it for the guy that's going to come in after you.
So you could be the lead technical artist on Assassin's Creed VR for 22 to 32K.
No. I don't think I want to do that.
Talent acquisition specialist in Brighton. Not quite sure why that's come up on Assassin's
Creed. Because that job title is absolutely a euphemism.
It is definitely a euphemism, isn't it? It's quite interesting that Glassdoor just... cuts out all the bullshit and says, no, this one means assassin. If you want to be an assassin, this is what you should apply for. I guess, similar sort of thing. You need to know the lingo and how to get in, don't you?
Yeah, it's all just, this is the problem. This is why, normal jobs, much easier. You can just, go and go on job serve and click apply. You haven't got to, figure out the secret codes to cause attention.
Well, I think either way, you are right to be thinking about exiting cyber and retraining as either a ballerina or an assassin. I think in the current market, that seems like we're going into recession. It's definitely the time to be doing that.
Well, I will I'll get on it. I'll start looking tomorrow.
Brilliant. Well, that's plenty long enough to be considered an episode. Might be released some point this quarter. Hang on, the quarter ends on tomorrow, actually, so it's not going to be released in Q2.
I was going to say, the quarter ends in like 4 hours.
Absolutely not committing myself to that. I think Q3 is achievable.
I think so, and I mean, these days it's not the issue used to be to delay things as long as you say we want to take the time to make sure that it's the best it can be. We know everyone's disappointed that the release is going to slip, but we think this is the best.
Yeah, we need to learn a lesson from Cyberpunk, don't we? We need to.
We don't want to release things before they're ready. We don't want to force our team to work unreasonable hours.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crunch is terrible.
I find it heartening that our Patreon supporters haven't actually twigged that they are shareholders yet, because they could very much hold a shareholders meeting and have us all sacked.
I'm more concerned about the fact that if they're shareholders, that means that really we should be paying dividends.
I think every episode is a dividend.
Yeah.
And yes, good point. We have stopped paying dividends.
Yes.
Yeah, we're recording the dividends. We're just not actually paying them. So yes, maybe we should start doing that a bit more.
Share buybacks. But
I'm sure we'll squeeze another episode in before our fun weekend in Milton Keynes. And I dare say we won't record anything while we're there, because who can be arsed with that?
It's a lot of effort.
It is.
You've got to edit it and put it out.
Yeah. I think they will effectively be listening to us doing brilliant banter in the pub, and we should just treat that as a live show. The four of us sit on one side of the table and they all have to sit on the other side, but a few feet back, so they're an audience. And no, in fact, they don't get a table. They just get to sit 5 feet away from the table in rows. And then we talk, they have to be quiet, they're not allowed on their phones. Which I think is probably not too dissimilar from going to the pub with us anyway.
Yeah, I think we might be setting our targets a little bit high, but...
Mm. Anyway, it is a live podcast. It's just one that lasts for 48 hours and won't be recorded.
We don't record it, yeah.
And released, yes.
Yeah, but I think that's best for literally everyone.
Yes.
Everyone in existence.
True, right. Well, goodbye, you are a lot.
Yeah, I should probably start recording the podcast, really.
Yeah, do we like.